Welcome to Chevron's Left, a Stargate podcast. I'm Jess.
I'm Melanie.
And I'm Chelsea. And with us tonight, we also have...
Hi, I'm Andrea.
And we're talking about Hathor, which is season one, episode 13. And it was written by... The teleplay is by Jonathan Glassner. The story is by David Bennett Caron and J. Larry Carroll. And it was directed by Brad Turner, which is... He directed many episodes. It aired the 24th of October, 1997. This is the first appearance of Tracy Westerholm as Staff Sergeant Westerholm. She's kind of a background character, but I always get excited when we have some other recurring women on the show.
It's also the first appearance of Sue-Ann Braun as Hathor. She comes back later as well.
That is true.
She comes back?
Good Lord. Spoilers!
What? I mean, oh, yeah. Which is as good a time as any to say that we generally have spoilers on this podcast for the entire series and shows of the Stargate universe. It's weird because the show's called Stargate Universe, but usually like, so all the Stargate shows, but mostly just SG-1. And we will probably have explicit content, especially in this episode, because there's rape, so be prepared for that. All right, Melanie, synopsis.
The synopsis is, the Gould Queen Hathor, named after the Egyptian sex goddess, awakens after being discovered in her sarcophagus in Mexico and makes her way to the Stargate Command. She begins to exert her influence on the men of the base in order to build her own Jaffa army. It is up to the females of the base to stop Hathor before it's too late.
All right.
I also think it's important that we note that in the Illustrated Companion, the synopsis starts with, super bitch Hathor. So we're setting the tone well there.
Wonderful.
And the tone continues. So Chelsea mentioned that Jonathan Glassner did the teleplay. So in the companion, he says, I happened to be watching TV and saw that an archaeologist had found an intact crypt in Egypt where they thought they had never been one. I thought, God, what if a Goa'uld was still trapped inside a tomb? I did a little research and found out that according to ancient mythology, Ra married his mother. So I kind of spun it off from there, and yes, she really was the goddess of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. In fact, the Black Widow legend is based loosely on her because she killed most of the men she had sex with. She was a nasty, nasty woman.
That's
I so mean, wrong. It's never a nice thing to say, but it did not age well.
No, it didn't.
Thanks to a certain orange president. Yeah, so, yeah, this episode... I don't think it was good when it aired. It does not age well either.
But hang on. According to Shanks, though, people loved it.
Yeah. And according to, I tweeted today that we were recording this episode and someone was like, I love this episode. So there are people out there who like it.
Yeah. I find that disappointing.
Yeah.
I would be interested to know why people like it.
Yeah, actually, I would too. If you're listening and you like this episode, we would like to know what it is you enjoy about this episode. So feel free to reach out.
I have hearty bet that the reason that they like it is because it's like women kicking ass. Like they're the ones who get to like save the day. I would say sure.
Mm-hmm.
The way it's done could have been better.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I love women kicking butt always.
But there are lots of ways to do that that aren't revolving around like shady sexual practices and men being, you know,
raped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's much like, you know, Emancipation was kind of cool because Sam kind of kicked ass, kind of. But the whole episode as a whole was completely terrible.
Right. So it's like Sam and Janet kick ass, but at what cost?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and it's also kind of disturbing whenever you think that like the only like context in which the women can step up and like take the lead is whenever the men are all like psychologically compromised and under some spell. Like,
yeah,
it leaves no room for women to step into leadership alongside men or in it without them, you know, being absent or something. But
mm-hmm.
That's a very good point. I wholeheartedly agree. But yeah, so just a difficult episode. But in order just to dive into it, did we do the synopsis this time? I can't remember.
We did, yes.
Okay. Yes. So I feel like we should just let people know this is the fourth or fifth time we've attempted to record this episode, and we're a little delirious right now.
Yeah. So, in keeping with Jonathan Glassner's inspiration for this episode, it starts with some archaeologists and the Temple of the Inscriptions in Palenque, Mexico, which they're busting into this new crypt that they hadn't been allowed to. They thought there might have been something there, but weren't allowed to before because the Mexican government hadn't given them permission, which is just, I mean, they seemed a little put out that they hadn't been able to search it before, but like, white colonialism and our need to go investigate everyone else's history. Maybe not the greatest. Especially because then they take the sarcophagus and send it to the United States. So
that's true.
I thought Hathor did that.
No. It was
that's right. No. Yeah, I remember.
So the archaeologists bust in and they find a sarcophagus, which is already really weird because the Mayans didn't really do sarcophagi. And then there are Egyptian hieroglyphs on it, which further makes them confused. And then they actually mention Daniel Jackson. They're like, the guy says that he read a paper by this discredited young archaeologist that everyone laughed out of academia for saying that there was a crossover between some of the ancient cultures. And so then they, after speaking of Daniel, they go ahead and pull a Daniel and decide to touch the glowy weird stone on the sarcophagus.
It's just like, it just eats at me. Because you don't touch the glowing orb on the weird sarcophagus. Like, that's, everybody knows that. When you see a glowing orb, you don't just go out and touch it.
Yeah. we were both yelling at the TV. Like,
it's
why?
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I mean, maybe it's an archaeologist thing. And that's, you know, it's just consistent that Daniel always touches things that he shouldn't. So they touch the crystal or rock or whatever it was, and then the sarcophagus opens and a perfectly manicured hand pops out of the sarcophagus.
I gotta say, I love her nail color. I was like pausing and being like, I'd like that. I don't know what color that is, but I want it.
It was a good color. Yeah, for sure. So then she pops out and uses the hand device on those poor unsuspecting archaeologists. And
they did.
And then it cuts to the gate room where we have the sarcophagus and Daniel and Hammond are talking about it. And so I pulled a clip from the scene largely because it sounds to me like there's an obvious break in here where there's some ADR where it came in and recorded later. Mm. And maybe it's not. And it's Daniel kind of introducing what's happening and why they reached out to him. And I like that they actually do this little explanation of giving us a compelling reason that the sarcophagus ended up at SGC.
Mm-hmm.
And who thought to send it here?
Dr. Kleinhaus's other associates who were outside the pyramid. They recognized the significance of an Egyptian sarcophagus in a Mayan temple. And since I was the only one to ever do research in cross-pollinization of ancient cultures, they tracked me down.
Did you catch that, like, where the audio sounds way different?
No, I'm with you. That stood out to me as well while we were watching it.
But also just Daniel explaining that he was the only person to reach out to for this when they realized that there was this weird cross-pollinization, as he calls it.
I guess I'm just confused. One, why is it in the gate room of all the places? The gate room's like the very last level of the SGC.
I mean, maybe they drop it in with the crane to get it.
Hi? Sure. And then, why not Area 51? Why not somewhere? Like, they've been bringing tech and shit back. Where they've been storing it?
I have an answer for that, though.
I'd love to hear it.
It's because we needed that convenient plot device to
That is not an answer.
Hagul. That is why it's in the gate room.
It's odd. And I mean, all right, sure, it's in the SGC. I get it. Daniel is the expert. Daniel's pretty mobile. Daniel can go to the sarcophagus to observe it and study it. I don't understand why it had to come to the SGC. Don't you put your hand down if the words out of your mouth are plot device.
Again, it's a convenient plot device to save Jack from being a ghoul. Would you rather him be a ghoul or would you rather him be Jack? Because without the sarcophagus, He'd be a
DuPont. Listen,
if we're going to start making changes to this script, I don't feel like that's the change that we need to make.
That's fair. That's fair.
So Hammond and I almost just called him Shanks, and Daniel Jackson are having their conversation, and Airman comes in and says that an unauthorized woman has been detained trying to enter the SGC, and the reason they didn't just turn her away and have the police come get her is because she knows the Stargate is there. And so then the whole team shares very meaningful looks, and we cut to the titles.
Yep.
So then we come back to so Jack and Daniel and General Hammond enter the holding cell where Hathor is being kept and start to talk to her. And we get, so she really does come off as pretty crazy sauce right off the bat. She's talking in the royal we.
Are we supposed to assume that's like her host in the Goa'uld speaking as the we? Or is she just the royal we? I mean, is there a reason?
Both? I like both.
Yeah. ¿Por qué no los dos?
Well, I guess maybe like it's like her and all of her like egg laying.
Oh, okay, gross. No, can we not?
Hey, we have a lot to talk about that, okay? I'm preparing you.
Oh, so gross.
Yeah, so she introduces herself as Hathor, and Daniel seems to recognize that, and we get, I don't know how much of this clip I pulled, so I'm just going to play it and we'll see.
Hathor?
Yes.
Have you heard of her?
Hathor was the Egyptian goddess of fertility, inebriety, and music.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll?
In a manner of speaking, yes.
Good clip.
In the companion, there's like a little like blurb for Hathor that kind of expands, and it just says, Hathor is the mother of all pharaohs, and it was the patron of alcoholic beverages, music and dance, love, and pregnant women. She almost obliterated mankind until a vast quantity of blood-colored beer made her too drunk to continue. It's claimed she could charm even the mighty Ra out of his darkest moods by dancing naked around his throne.
What?
Critical information.
Whoa!
The SP-1 Illustrated Companion.
Beer that was in the color of blood, is that what you said?
And that is correct. And she was about to destroy mankind, and then blood-colored beer distracted her and made her too drunk to continue.
That's totally information that everyone needs to know.
Don't know why I rather would have had like an RDA quote about this episode, but I'll take some Hathor information, I guess.
Yeah. It's important to maybe put into perspective that this episode may be bonkers and obnoxious and gross, but it's got nothing on mythology.
Yeah, exactly.
Are we frozen?
No,
you're good. We're just laughing at you.
We're laughing at what you said.
Poor Chelsea. She's just so paranoid
she's
now.
Yeah, so Daniel gives us the backstory of Hathor a little bit, and then Hathor proceeds to talk about herself a little bit, and so of course Jack is like, this chick is crazy. I just like, okay, we're 14 episodes into this show. And they've seen some bonkers shit.
Yes.
Why do they still always jump to crazy as the answer?
Yeah, I thought the same, actually. I was wondering why Jack was giving her such shit about being, like, super wacko crazy whenever I'm like, haven't they seen, like, if anybody could believe this crazy story, shouldn't it be these guys? Like, the stuff that they've been exposed to?
Yep. Like, my quote was, my note was, why are they all being so weirdly dismissive? Like, okay, some chick who knows the Stargate is under there, knows about Ra, is saying that she's like this Egyptian goddess. You know that there's a link between Egyptian gods, or now we know most gods, and the Goa'uld. Why are you not taking this? And all it would have taken was like, take off her coat or something and like, look at the shit she's wearing. I don't know. Like, why were you? I don't understand it either. I'm very confused. And they remain that way for a good portion of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. It is kind of baffling that they completely dismiss it out of hand when there is decent evidence that that she could be, and that they probably have ways to verify, like, hey, why don't we give her a quick ultrasound to see if there's a snake in her freaking neck? Like, I don't.
Yes. Yeah. You know, those tests that our team members have to go through after they come back from the gate to make sure they aren't gold. How about we just throw her in one?
Yep. Yeah. So I was frustrated by that. And I also, like, this is a long-standing frustration I have with this series, where the number of times they assume people are crazy instead of being like, maybe something weird and alien is going on instead of someone being crazy. I hadn't remembered that started even this early, where it's like, yeah, she could be an alien, guys.
Yeah. And also, this is also the same time. So, like, after all that happens, like, Daniel goes to, like, uncuff Hathor. And he goes, what is she going to do? Beat us up? And I just want to be like, yeah, Daniel, maybe she will.
Exactly. You know nothing about this person.
We don't know. What you're trying to say, that because she's a woman, she won't beat you up? Fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, Sam, kick Daniel's ass. I'm just going to put it on the table real quick.
Yes, that is absolutely true. Also, it's very frustrating. Yeah. And but Jack and Hammond are like, yeah, go ahead, uncuff her.
Right. It's just setting the tone for the rest of the episode.
Yeah. We do get in this scene the one great moment, this with Hathor.
You with a crown of marble.
So great.
She might mean you, sir.
I think I have more of that clip, but that was really the only part that mattered.
Yeah, that was great. That made you literally laugh out loud in the episode.
Yeah.
Hammond of Texas with the crown of marble.
Yeah.
That's Hammond's legacy.
Yeah. So, I'm wondering where she got the coat. Like, why is she wearing this military coat? Like, did she just turn up and the guy at the door thought she was a little too risque, so he just lent her a coat?
I think it's one of the archaeologists' coats.
Yeah, I was saying, it's like a trench coat, kind of, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So really? It looks military to me.
I think maybe. I thought it was the trench coat from one of the archaeologist guys. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
That makes more sense than just her having a random military coat.
For sure.
No, but I will say I was confused too as to why she had a coat. I was like, why are we wearing a coat? I don't understand. And then she took the coat off and I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Also, can we ask? Okay, so she was in the sarcophagus in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Then at some point, she got out of the sarcophagus. The sarcophagus came to the SGC. How did Hathor get to the SGC?
She walked.
No, she just like went to an airport and seduced everyone and got a free plane ticket.
There you go.
All right, that'll work too. I accept that.
And it was pre 9/11, so security wasn't as strict either.
Yeah,
I accept it.
I mean, also the sarcophagus it must have taken some time to get shipped there as well. So there's a decent amount of time. Like that,
sure.
There's probably a couple weeks in there, in them tracking Daniel down and shipping their sarcophagus there. So
I like to think that she was just like slowly tracking the movements of the sarcophagus while they were packaging it up. She was like poking around a corner and like keeping her eye on it. And then she followed it all the way to the trench coat.
She's a detective.
There we go. Problem solved.
Subtlety doesn't really seem like her thing, though.
And there's just like Pink Panther music in the background. Just
exactly.
That's a really funny visual.
It was great.
All right. So Jack and Hammond leave and instruct Daniel to keep talking to her to get more information.
Why is that a good idea? Why? I don't understand
Hammond
leaving Daniel by himself.
Also, don't forget that Hathor kissed Hammond before he left.
Oh yeah, he kissed her hand. She kissed his hand. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Daniel's.
So Daniel's first, and then Hammond went to leave, and Hathor said she wanted to kiss the hand of the leader or whatever, and he was like, hell no.
Yeah.
And then Daniel told him he needed him to play into her delusion. Yeah. Which again, why are we still assuming it's a delusion? I mean, at that point, Daniel's whammied. So
that's true.
So he's playing along with her tactics, I would assume.
Yeah.
But I still don't understand why it was a good idea to leave Daniel alone with Hathor. Like, I get it that General Hammond's under her whammy spell or whatever, but Jack's not yet. And Jack's like, no, it's cool, man.
Yeah.
It's cool.
I guess because there's, like, airmen outside the door. So, like, yeah, they want information. Daniel has presumably undergone some kind of training in order for him to be.
But she's still dangerous.
But they don't.
Random chick.
They don't. Or they're underestimating her because she's a woman. Like, I honestly think that there's some of that going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Daniel tells her that Ra is dead. So, because she asks about her husband. And she seems pleased by that information.
Yep.
And she says that he will now be her beloved.
Nice.
And then she, like, kisses him and gives him, like, an extra boost of the whammy juice.
And then does a little come hither move.
Yeah.
Does she, like, fully kiss him in this scene?
We don't see them, yeah. like, no, do they?
But it's, like, real close.
We see the
like
pink between their lips, the, like.
It's a lot of, like, pink, smoky stuff, but I didn't.
Yeah.
I
don't but then, isn't this the scene where after she does the come hither, then he kisses her? Or is that the next scene?
It's the next one they're together where like they kiss. Like, when they're
together. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, she beckons him to her bed, to the bunk that's conveniently in this
holding area.
Holding cell.
Yeah. So then we go to the briefing room, and Daniel is saying that she's a Goa'uld.
Yeah.
And we get this line from Jack, which again, Jack, come on, man.
Is mental illness contagious?
Again, what the hell?
I feel like this was written like way early on. And then they just decided to put it, like, in the middle of the season.
It would make more sense if it were early. I mean, it would still suck, but it would make more sense earlier in terms of them being like, what, an alien? Yeah, right, yeah. Lady.
Or, yeah. Like, the fact that they've met now, like, they understand what a Goa'uld is, and if Daniel's coming to you and saying, she's a Goa'uld, then you'd be like, yeah, okay, cool. Like, there's someone with experience saying he's a Goa'uld.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd think that, because they don't understand that Daniel's under her spell, so his word, they purposefully left him in there to get information out of her, so if he comes back and says, okay, I talked to her and I think she's a Goa'uld, you'd think that at that point you'd be like, okay, we need to treat this as a Goa'uld. But no, Jack's still just thinking she's a crazy lady. So Daniel and Hammond want to bring her down into the briefing room, and everyone else doesn't.
Okay. Can we talk about the weird eye contact scene between Daniel and Hammond?
Oh my gosh, with the really intensely close close-ups.
Yes.
I laughed so hard. I literally laughed out loud because, like, Shanks's eyes kind of, like, narrow intensely, but then Hammond's / Donis Davis's, like, widen, like, you do? And like Daniel's like flash purple. It's so dumb. It's all so dumb.
Yes.
But it made me laugh.
Yeah. No, it's really funny and silly. But we definitely noted it while we were watching. We're like, these are some extreme close-ups, man.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're kind of establishing that we're on the same side. And they want to bring her down, and everyone else, so the rest of SG-1 is like, no, that's a terrible plan. But then they're insistent on it. And Sam is like, well, at least can we close the blast doors so we're not just showing her the Stargate?
Mm-hmm. Right. It's weird that they like specifically wanted the meeting to take place in that room. Like, how easy would it be for them all just to walk down the hall and do it in her like containment room?
Right.
Yeah.
I guess we've got a whammy general. So all bets are off at this point going forward.
And I was proud of Sam for at least, like, getting, like, well, I've lost this battle, but we're at least gonna shut the freaking blast door, so then Hathor comes down and is being ridiculous. I think the actress probably does a good job with what she was asked to do, it's just that she was asked to do the worst thing.
I find it bizarre that the way that she does the initial like whammying is like a kiss to the back of the hand. I find that strangely bizarre. It's like the most unnatural gesture to make.
I would say that it's the easiest to hide because you can't really like get up in someone's face with everyone else watching you and kind of just blow purple smoke in their face.
I mean, with the right moves and the right confidence, you could.
She doesn't have the hands so it's like hidden, and so
I guess.
Yeah.
Do you have the special place clip by any chance?
The special?
So Hathor takes Jack's hand and says, I hear you're the one who killed Ra. You forever will hold a special place here. And like puts his hand like right above her left breast. Uh-huh. And he goes, and what a special place that is.
I, t- I didn't pull that clip.
But don't worry, Jess just reenacted
it. Yeah, yeah, don't worry, we don't need it. Jess nailed it.
While wearing the Jack O'Neill shirt. I came prepared.
Yeah. So, yeah, so Jack gets whammied because Hammond makes her take Hathor a glass of water. And she does the weird special place thing. Mm-hmm. And then Teal'c out and out identifies her as a Goa'uld. He's like, straight up says, no, she's a Goa'uld. And he's not whammied. We don't have any reason to believe that Teal'c is compromised at that point. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, except that she tries.
But after he has identified her as a Goa'uld, she tries. Because then she's like, oh, a Jaffa. And they have this little exchange.
Together, we can defeat them.
I will serve no Goa'uld.
You tell her, Teal'c.
Yes.
You tell her.
And so after that exchange, she attempts to whammy Teal'c. And we don't know, like, we see it happen and we assume that it was successful. And so now Carter is like the lone voice of reason in the room because everyone's like, oh, yes, Hathor is amazing and let's all do what she says. And Carter's like, the fuck?
And fucking good for Sam for how much and how verbally and how like strong she was for like standing up to not just her superior direct commanding officer, but like the general of the fucking base.
Yeah. Yeah. I pulled the clip and it's a fairly long clip of her just cause I love it so much. Well, so it starts, I pulled starting with, the Sam Hathor exchange.
It's a good place.
Yeah.
She's beautiful.
Yeah.
You're an exceedingly beautiful woman.
Thank you, so are you.
Such an awkward scene.
Such an awkward moment.
She's so awkward. I love Sam. I relate to her so hard. Thank you, so are you.
Question mark? What else do you say to that?
I mean, you're right.
So just say thanks.
Yeah. You can just say thank you.
Like, she's polite and returned the compliment.
Yeah.
But she could have lied. Maybe.
Yeah. And so then after that, I have the bulk of the rest of the exchange with Carter sticking up for herself.
General Hammond, I believe we should keep Miss Hathor under house arrest until we can better...
Don't be impolite, Captain.
Impolite, sir? She's a Goa'uld.
She is a guest of this facility, Captain.
General, this is crazy. It doesn't make any sense. Colonel O'Neill.
I am in command of this facility, Captain Carter, not Colonel O'Neill. Is that understood?
But, sir...
Understood.
Well, sir, with respect, it seems that this woman has all you guys under some sort of spell or something.
Are you questioning my orders, Captain?
Yes, sir, I guess I am. Colonel O'Neill, are you going to back me up on this?
Yes, Captain. If I see that there's a problem.
Aww, poor Sam.
Poor Sam.
Poor Sam. I also love that she's sort of already noted that all the men seem to be under a spell, but she still goes to Jack for backup. She's like, come on, Colonel. Oh, and then he lets her down.
Well, it's kind of interesting to me because, like, one, Sam comes to the, like, spell whammy so quickly.
So fast.
It's like, y'all must be under some... She's the one who's putting you under some sort of spell. And it's like, okay. For plot reasons, I understand why you had to come to this conclusion very quickly.
I mean, but they do act kind of strangely.
Sure. But we also just spent the first 5 minutes being like, no way can she be a Goa'uld. So it's like, okay. And then I really like this scene because, I mean, it develops way more during the episode, but this is the start of the camera focusing on Jack, and you can kind of see him, like, fighting the whammy spell a little bit, and he does it throughout. Like, Hathor has to reapply it quite a few times for it to stick to Jack, and then you find out later that it's because he's got these, like, special ops mind combating techniques, mm-hmm. but you really see that establishing... Right here in this scene.
Yeah, like he does seem to be confused.
Yeah.
For pretty much the whole episode. But yeah, I agree that Sam jumping immediately to lead to you guys are under her spell. It was like, man, she figured it out so freaking fast. Yeah. It reminded me of watching X-Files when and they have like a crazy case and Mulder's like, oh yeah, for sure. It's like vampires. And you're like, that's absurd. That's dumb. And then always Mulder is like, right. He always figures out the right answer so fast. And you're like,
yeah.
And that's how it felt with Sam is like, she's like, no, you guys are under her spell. Nailed it on the head in one.
Yep.
But I do think, I mean, because we know that Sam does have a respect for authority and the command chain, but specifically Hammond. Yeah. And so it must have taken her a lot of guts to stand up to him and defy his orders multiple times, tell him that she was questioning his orders to his face. It's good for her. And
this is like not the first time too. Sam is willing to like break not necessarily like regulations, but like protocol when like she needs to for the betterment of the base. So like we'll see it happen later in Foothold. I'm sure there are other reasons, other times. I'm just the whole thing with Orlin, like the episode name I can't remember. It's really Ascension. Bad. Ascension, so I don't talk about it. But yeah, so Sam is definitely willing to break protocol when necessary.
Yeah. Which is how a good officer is supposed to be in terms of being willing to do what they believe is right. Like chain of command is important, but they're also, especially commissioned officers, are trained to take initiative and think for themselves as well.
Right.
So.
And Sam totally took initiative in this episode.
Yes.
Hell yeah, she did.
So then we go to the guest quarters, I guess, where they're putting Hathor up. And there's some discussion about whether or not there should be guards posted outside the door. And so then we have to re-up. This is one of the times that we re-up Jack's whammy, right? Because he wants there to be guards.
Yeah.
Well, she re-upped everybody's whammy, even Hammond's.
Yeah. Yeah. She hit everybody again.
Oh, I was going to say that it's Jack who, at least the camera lets us see, like, questioning Hathor. And so, like, I think we see, from what I remember, Jack gets the whammy reapplied to him more than almost anybody else. It's hard to tell between like an extra dose of whammy and Hathor just being like, do what I say, smoke, versus like whammy smoke.
Yeah.
What? Is there a distinction between her smokes?
Yeah, I was going to say, are there different smokes?
Well, it just seemed like she applied it in different ways. So that there's like the initial whammy of full on control. And then sometimes it felt like there was like a low grade whammy. Like just to kind of like help lubricate the situation. A little bit of very intentional word choice there.
I mean, maybe she makes Daniel stay behind when Jack and Hammond leave, and this is when she says it's time to make time for you to become our chosen one. It's really creepy. And then she basically reads him some really one-sided marriage vows that it's like marriage vows, but like, you're going to love me and cherish me and honor me and die for me. And in return, you're going to give like nothing. You're going to die.
You're going to be a pharaoh.
Right. Well, except that she kills all the pharaohs, doesn't she? Wasn't that part of her?
I didn't say that. I mean, I didn't say,
it wasn't a good deal, but it's a deal.
I didn't say it was a great deal. I just said he's going to be a pharaoh.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Yeah, so that's pretty much what that's where that one cuts. And then they kiss in that scene.
Mm-hmm. Which, can we all just, I know we talked about how this is like, we're going to talk about rape here, but like also, guys, that's sexual assault. That's rape. The exact same thing that happened to Jack and Brie Candle. Mm-hmm. That is what is happening here to Daniel.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No.
And others that we didn't see on camera, but for sure, Daniel on camera.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only one we know of where sex happened, which hasn't, as far as we know, it's just kissed so far, because then we still have the whole scene. I don't want to talk about more than once, so we'll wait till we get to it.
Yeah,
so then we have the walk and talk in the hall with Carter and Jack, where Carter tries to appeal to Jack again to try and get him on her side and to just get somewhat, I feel like she must feel like, what's his name? Will Ferrell's character in Zoolander. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Never seen Zoolander.
Oh, come on. Have you seen Zoolander?
No.
How am I the only one who's seen Zoolander?
I don't like Will Ferrell, so.
What? You don't like Will Ferrell?
He's not even that. I wouldn't go that far. It's not even that big of a role in that one.
I don't think he's funny, and so
right, but it's not like, because that movie is a it's a Ben Stiller,
it's Ben Stiller, right?
Vehicle, yeah. It's Will Ferrell isn't the main character in that, but he is the one that says that line. Anyway, I can't believe I'm the only one of the four of us who's seen that. That's crazy.
I'm glad we've stayed on Zoolander this long.
Carter brings up again that she thinks that she has somehow gotten all the men infatuated with her. And Jack says, she's a fascinating lady, isn't she? And I'm like, oh, gosh.
The only two things I noted from that exchange was, one, that Jack kind of almost makes a little bit of sense when he uses the enemy of my enemy is my friend line.
Yeah.
That kind of makes sense. And then Jack touches Sam's shoulder as he leaves the exchange. There's a little bit of a, like, shoulder touch, squeeze, it's going to be all right situation, and I just wanted to note that.
You can note it, but what I wrote in my notes is shoulder touch, only of the patronizing variety, so not quite as fun. Because he's like, come on, Captain, get on board. Yes, there was contact, and it was deliberate and obvious, but I was also like, it's not as fun as when he's being affectionate or sweet.
Don't worry, that comes later.
Yep.
I got more.
But he also does make, so I pulled the clip, because I do think he does, this is kind of a good point that he makes.
Captain, if you don't mind my saying so, you're treating her exactly the way you hate to see people treat Teal'c. Bit of a double standard, don't you think?
Teal'c has proven whose side he's on. She hasn't.
Carter, have you ever heard the old saying, my enemy's enemy is my friend?
Yes, sir. But even when the CIA grants sanctuary to an enemy turncoat, they never trust him. They watch him like a hawk.
Daniel's watching her right now.
Watching her. So, yeah. Like, he almost sounds reasonable there, right? Like, yeah. Because he does have a point. People always question Teal'c, and they do get frustrated by that. And she can say, well, yeah, Teal'c has proven himself, but he's only proven himself to them. And they still right. go to alien planets and they're like, no, he's cool. He's with us. It's still a little out of character, especially for Jack, who him, I think that is the only time in the entire series he ever defends a Goa'uld. Or yes. a symbiote at all. Like, even the Tok'ra. Like,
I'm confused about how she's considered, like, the enemy of my enemy.
Because she, like, said she wanted to defeat the other Goa'uld.
Yeah.
We did kind of skip that. She did say
she
that.
She wants to defeat Apophis.
Yeah, she wants to take out Apophis.
Yeah.
And who's the big bad?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. I missed that one.
He's the big bad that we've kind of been low-key tracking, but the show has forgotten that we're tracking a little bit. He has taken, like, friends of SG-1 captured.
Yeah, so he took Daniel's wife. And her brother.
Okay. And Jack, the guy from the first episode?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, that's Apophis. And she wants to kill Apophis. And so that...
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So after that little exchange, we go to the gate room where Daniel is having a conversation with Hathor, talking about how history remembers her and all the stories about her and how she could control men with just her beauty. And she asks him, you know, basically how she lives up to the legends. And he says that it's interesting because he doesn't say, like, you live up to them or you exceed them. He just says, like, I have a better understanding of them now, which I thought was kind of interesting that he doesn't just, like, kind of heap praises at her feet.
Yeah, that's true. He's kind of just in it for the knowledge almost.
Yeah, which is very appropriate for Daniel Jackson. And she describes herself as the queen of all the gods and, like, the mother of the gods or whatever. And so this is where we find out where Goa'uld larvae come from, that there's, like, queen Goa'uld that spawn.
Which is really gross.
Yeah. And then Daniel likens her to a queen bee. Which is just kind of funny to me because she's talking about being a queen and spawning larvae, and he talks like he's making this big leap, like, you're a queen bee. And I'm like, yeah, dude, that's exactly what she just described herself as.
But it was a nicer way of putting it.
I guess so, yeah.
People don't mind bees so much as, you know, rapists.
Yeah.
But so am I remembering this wrong? And I guess we'll find out when we get to, like, season 6 or 7. But isn't there, like, a giant actual symbiote that they find in, like, the tank for the Tritonin? Yes.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So, like, what about that?
Maybe that's what Hathor is, really? That's the ghoul that's inside of Hathor?
Ew!
Yeah.
I think it's so big!
Maybe that's what's inside Hathor.
Yeah. I didn't think about that at all. That's
You're welcome.
Ew.
I mean, it's still a symbiote. It's just a big one.
It's big.
Yeah, because all the little baby larvae have to come out of it.
So okay, I take it back. I don't want
to think. Yeah, we're going to just move past it.
Taking it back. That's so fucking gross.
So then we go to Janet and Carter having lab time together, which is always my favorite. And Sam is doing research on Hathor.
And she called it the net. And yes.
Okay. I have a lot of notes about this scene.
I do too.
About the usage of the internet and how they just take it as absolute fact.
Especially and that it's on awesome the internet, webpage.
So you know it's true.
Yeah, exactly.
That awesome webpage that was totally from 1997.
Yes. Yes.
Where the text was like different font or different yes. sizes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was, it definitely was a very 90s website that she had found.
I loved it. It was great.
We can assume maybe that Sam knows how to navigate the internet well enough to be able to identify more reliable sources than others. She's real smart.
Well, she did say that Daniel was the one that usually does the research.
Yeah, well, and yeah, so she said that she was a little bit out of her depth because this is his area of expertise.
I love the idea of Sam being like this badass, can handle alien tech after handling it for 5 seconds, but absolutely cannot in any way, shape, or form navigate Microsoft Office or Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
Just completely foreign.
Yeah.
What does it mean when the A is inside of the circle?
Except that...
I would love that.
So it's adorable to think of, but she had to write a doctoral thesis in astrophysics. So yeah, her understanding
program. I know. It's just fun to think about.
It's prime fic material, Jess. Please feel free.
No. And then Chelsea will comment and tell me how terrible and unrealistic it is.
Yeah, I would absolutely. What? Actually, like, I would ever Sam do that.
Okay, so they did fun internet stuff together.
Yeah, and we discovered that there's a presumption that Hathor isn't just like the Egyptian goddess of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. She's like all of the sex goddesses throughout history, and that she was known to be maybe have magical powers that controlled men. And so,
which is kind of convenient for the sake of future episodes, because if they're going to lump all sex goddesses up into this one character, then at least they kind of got her out of the way here, so they don't have recurring mm-hmm. sex goddesses later in the series. So,
that's actually very true.
I
didn't think about it like that. That's yeah. good. I like that.
I am glad cool. we don't have to find more of them.
Yeah.
Also, is Hathor the only Goa'uld who actually is magic?
Doesn't Nirti? No, she does science.
She's science.
Yeah.
So is Hathor magic? The host?
Other than Anubis, but he's a special case.
But yeah. He's like a spirit kind of.
Yeah.
Because then is it the symbiote that has the magic, or did the host have magic?
That's a good question. Maybe she had like succeeded in Nirti type experiments in creating a host that had powers or something.
Like powers.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Let's throw it to the fans. What do you think?
So then we get this description of Hathor's victim.
In almost every case, it describes them as drunk with her presence.
Well, that would be how I describe our boys.
Yeah. Now, I figure she's using some form of Goa'uld technology. Any ideas?
My guess would be some sort of chemical we've never seen. A sort of super pheromones combined with something like sodium pentothal, probably airborne delivery.
Great. How do we reverse it in the men?
Well, it may not be reversible, and if it is, it may take years.
We probably don't even have days before this Goa'uld does whatever it is she's trying to do.
So what do you suggest, Captain?
I suggest we neutralize her.
Yeah, Sam!
Woo!
I like it how Sam's like, do you have any guesses? And then Jen proceeds to say exactly what it probably is.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she's pretty spot on, too. I mean, so the pheromones, that's a pretty standard guess, but to say that it's mixed with some kind of, like, sodium pentothal and airborne delivery. The airborne delivery is kind of interesting. Like,
yeah.
But she's right. It is airborne delivery.
I mean,
sort of through skin.
Can we guess that pink smoke is visible to other people in the room?
I don't think it's supposed to be.
Because otherwise, Jack would have been like, the fuck you doing to my general way back when?
Yeah. Yeah. So there is. So it's interesting, though. So they talk about super pheromones and stuff that we never really get an explanation for why it only works on men. I mean, maybe it's the pheromone component.
Maybe it's the 90s component.
Maybe it's the 90s. Maybe they don't want to try it on the women because it wouldn't work out too well.
Yeah. Although she was exceedingly beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe Hathor wanted to try it on Carter.
She probably definitely did.
I mean, I wouldn't blame her.
I mean, she did.
For wanting to try it. I would blame her for doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. But alas, the 90s stopped us. Lesbians hadn't been invented yet, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that Carter is just like, well, we don't have time to like try and come up with another solution, so we got a neutralizer.
Right.
And then we get to go to like my least favorite scene ever. It's so bad.
The Daniel scene.
Yeah, it starts with this.
So you actually create the larva. How?
We must first have the code of life from the juices of the species intended as
code of life?
In order to assure compatibility for the Goa'uld child and the host.
DNA. I mean, you need DNA to prevent rejection.
The code of life. We do so enjoy the method of procuring the code in your species. It is much more pleasurable than most.
I bet.
I don't care for the use of juices.
Right? Right?
You guys should have seen us. We were all like flailing.
I don't like it. And then Daniel really like harps on the word code. And I'm like, wait. Can we go back to the juices for a second?
No, don't go back to the juices. Never go back to the juices.
Ugh. It was cringy, guys.
Oh my gosh.
I understand why you warned me about this episode.
Oh gosh, yeah. It's so bad. But there is a little moment here where she basically says, I need your code in order to make more Goa'uld. And she reaches for him and he grabs her arm and he's like, you want me to make more Goa'uld? Like, he's not down with that.
Yeah, there's some resistance.
And then she hits him with another dose of the whammy before then raping him.
Yeah.
So it like makes it even worse that he like resists first and we have to then watch her further subdue him before raping him. It's so gross.
I also don't understand fully, I guess, like then what the fuck a Goa'uld is. If it needs the DNA of essentially a host or another being to create more.
She needed the DNA in order to create the larvae that were compatible with the hosts.
So to be compatible with humans, she has to procreate with Daniel.
Okay, so then I guess like for the Jaffa or Jaffa, depending who you are, they had to procreate with them in order to make them be.
That's the impression I got. She's got to do it with all the species in order to plant the babies inside them. That's how I read it.
But then she just makes Jack
a Jaffa
with a magic. So
well, but, with her like circle thing.
But so Jack should be compatible with the larva because he's human and she took Daniel. The DNA from a human.
So is it true that there's never been a larva inside a human in all of history before this point?
In terms of a Jaffa?
No,
their hosts are human already.
So why does she need the code from Daniel if she already has it?
Well, but I would assume that she needs it for presumably maybe they're not asexual and that there has to be a male contributor. Although I don't know, that doesn't seem consistent with later. So she needs a contributor, and she needs it to be a human so that they can have human hosts. I don't know. This is not something that they stay super consistent with.
No, they don't. I think they retconned this whole Hathor incident.
Yeah.
And then just remade it back up later on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's no one likes Hathor, and it's weird, and there's rape, and
what kind of sucks about it is that, like, it feels them like it's a contrived plot device to rape Daniel. Because then it's like that it doesn't jive with what we already know about the Goa'uld and the symbiote situation, that they are parasites that need hosts. So you already kind of draw your own conclusions based on how we know parasites multiply. So then it just feels like, and then, like, to your point, Chelsea, like, why focus on showing Daniel resisting and then we get to see him be subdued further? Like, I don't understand the point of this episode at all. It just feels so contrived.
Yep. No, I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not good.
No.
And yeah.
Yeah, that makes it even more problematic, because I didn't realize what you guys are describing, that, like, this is not indicative of, like, the rest of, like, this isn't world building, this episode.
No, it really sounds doesn't. Like
they contradicted.
I mean, Hathor comes back, but they don't really she doesn't come back in terms of being like a queen creating more larvae. She just comes back as a Goa'uld that they're facing.
Yeah.
And in general, when we later learn about larvae and queen symbiotes and how they reproduce, it does not seem to jive with what we learn in this episode. So yeah,
so that's so creepy, because it's like it's one thing if you have a plot line and you sort of write yourself into a corner that leads to a really problematic scene, like that happens sometimes, and it's you know, it's terrible, and it's you don't want that to happen as a writer. But it's even worse whenever you just aim for a problematic scene and then write this plot to lead to it that then has no consequence in terms of, like, the overall world building of the series.
Right. Yeah. And that's almost how it feels. It's almost like they just wanted an excuse for Daniel to get raped. And
that's creepy.
Yep. Super not great. So, moving on, because I don't want to keep talking about it. I think it's the armory, but there's, like, all the computers things in the background. Carter is arming the women.
And she had time to change.
Well, she had to get her tech stuff on.
Yeah, she had to. She had to put her fatigues on. Like, she had. She.
Yes.
It's a militaristic situation.
Uh huh.
Because didn't Janet change too?
Yeah,
she did.
Yeah,
and they both all changed. Pretty
hot. Yeah, everybody had to.
The ladies in the episode were banging.
Yes, they.
What?
What did you say? Not like. That was a poor choice of words. They were looking good.
Maybe. There could be a fic on that.
No.
That was a genuine misstep. They looked good.
Yes, they did. He did. Sam gives the women instructions to not hurt the men because these are their guys and they're not acting on their own. Mm-hmm. And then Teal'c comes marching in. He's like, "Captain Carter, I wish to speak to you." And they all, like, pull their weapons on him. And he convinces them that he's immune to the whatever she's doing, and that she wants...
Which totally makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, yeah. I mean, sure.
I didn't thought it. Yeah. I didn't think it made sense. I quizzed Chelsea about it hardcore after the episode. I was like, this doesn't make any sense to me. Because my thinking... And Chelsea can correct me again. But my thinking was that, like, the fact that Teal'c is, like, essentially, he's carrying one of her babies, it feels like it should make him even more susceptible to her servitude. Like, wouldn't she want to have her, like, offspring and her carriers be more subject to her authority? Like, wouldn't that make him more susceptible to it? But then Chelsea was like, no.
But, well, so he's also not carrying Hathor's offspring. He's carrying Apophis, I guess.
But I mean, I thought she was really the mama know. Of all of the ghouls.
She says that, but then she also says there are other queens like her.
Yeah.
So I think that's just her overstating her role.
It's just ego.
Yeah.
She's trying to be a drama queen.
Because she's been in a sarcophagus for 2,000 years, and Teal'c symbiote is like only 10 years old.
Oh, okay.
Also, presumably, like in general, in nature, when something has some kind of venom or effect on outside species, it doesn't affect itself or its or like so mm-hmm. so like presumably she wouldn't be able to whammy other Goa'uld because they would have kind of an inbuilt
right. The example you said was like a snake's offspring is not susceptible to its own venom,
right?
Right. I just assumed that it's because he had a larva in there. And me too. It's because it's his immune system, so yep. It's automatically like, just got that shit out.
Yeah. Also, because up until this point, we've already kind of established that Teal'c is generally speaking like immune to like everything. Like, he's not affected by the Broken Divide stuff. He doesn't get affected by...
It's singularity. That's not yet.
But... Yeah, that's not yet. But eventually, like, he has a pattern of just basically not being affected at all, so I accepted it.
Until he is.
Until he is. Spoilers.
yeah, so Teal'c isn't affected, and he's very adamant that he's not going to let a Goa'uld take over the Earth on his watch. And,
yeah.
And he and Sam are like, so gung-ho, I love it.
Yeah.
Anytime Sam and Teal'c have meaningful interactions, I just think to myself, I wish we got more Sam and Teal'c. I love them so much.
We definitely don't get enough.
Nope, we don't. But I love this moment. And I love the respect and deference that Teal'c shows to her.
Yeah.
He really does. I mean, there's the moment with, and a little bit later, but he does respect her, and he's absolutely ready to just go into this battle with her. And
speaking of like respect and deference, so Carter's a captain. So, but she's taking charge of this group of women. So are we meant to believe that she is the highest ranking member at captain among all of these women?
That's how I took it. And which to be fair, though, woof. To be fair, though, there aren't that many women.
No, there's like fucking five of them.
So
I know, and they even make the comment of like, when was the last time a woman was assigned here?
Yeah,
it's rough, but probably not inaccurate.
It's probably not.
Which is weird too, because then we get a later scene when Janet's like, how her ex-husband was like, oh, honey, it's this a man's army.
Yeah.
But then she's like, yeah, well, the Air Force has been having women in it for decades. It's like, really? Your numbers don't fucking show it. Like, what are you trying to prove then? It was a strange contradiction. Like, this episode was simultaneously very self-aware and then very, very tone deaf.
Yeah. No, I had the same thought that, like, Carter does seem to be the ranking female officer on base, and she is a captain, which is, like, there's like not second lieutenant, first lieutenant, captain. Like, it is not that. It's not a high rank. I mean, she's a commissioned officer, but is not a high ranking commissioned officer.
And the only other thing I could think of is that maybe there were other higher ranking officers, but she's like on the flagship team and maybe like are just deferring to her because she has more experience.
Or they weren't on base at the time.
Yeah. But I thought it was odd. I mean, I'm all here. I'm definitely here for Carter taking charge. But I was like, wait, she's just a captain.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think there's a chance that she really is captain, the ranking female officer on base, but there also is a chance that there is a higher ranking one who just happened to not be in the building. Either she was off world or not, or at home or something.
True.
Regardless, it is sad that this was all the women.
Yeah.
Is this, sorry, I'm going to jump back to something that I heard you say earlier. Is this an Air Force unit?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Well, wait, why? SG-1 is Air Force.
Yeah, SG-3 is Marines.
But there's mixed, there's all branches at the SGC, but SG-1, it's the two military officers, which are Sam and Jack, are Air Force.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's an Air Force command, though. So the SGC is under General Hammond's command, and he's an Air Force general.
And the Stargate belongs to the Air Force? Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
The Stargate is under the Air Force's command, basically.
Okay.
Because it's like interstellar travel, and
that
would fall under their purview.
Is that something that the Air Force does?
Space Force.
Yeah,
the Space Force.
Which Amanda Tapping, which said she would join Space Force and not
And not Air Force.
I would totally join the Space Force if it had existed when I graduated high school.
But yeah, so it's an Air Force.
Okay.
Mostly, but they have a mixture. But the bulk of the soldiers in the SGC are Air Force airmen.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. We cut to Sam and Teal'c and their happy gang of misfits go down the hall into the guest quarters, and Daniel is sitting there on the bed looking shell-shocked. Yeah, and every bit a rape victim. And it is incredibly upsetting. Like, I had forgotten that, like, how lost and broken he looks when they walk in on him. Yeah. It makes it, I mean, on the one hand, it's like there's sort of that moment of acknowledging that, like, something terrible happened to him, but they don't ever really come back to it. But
there's no emotional fallout in this show, Chelsea.
There's a drinking game. There's a joke everyone about drink. It later on.
Yeah. But yeah.
They don't return to it in any significant way.
But it's very upsetting.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Sam really is also very upset, like, on Daniel's behalf.
She is, and she comes in and she is really concerned for him, but then gets the intel that Hathor's in the locker room, and she looks like kind of torn there for a second, of like, she wants to stay and comfort Daniel and look after Daniel, but she needs to go deal with Hathor. And so she has like this moment of indecision, and then leaves and goes to go after Hathor.
Teal'c seems conflicted too.
Yeah.
He gives him a weird look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So then they go to the locker room.
That fucking hot tub.
The hot tub.
So gross. God.
So yeah. It's like gross.
The noises that come out of the house.
Right? Yeah, there's the squeaking that got me.
Yeah. So Sam and they come in and they're all ready to take her down. And then she says like a go-old phrase, and all of the rest of the men in the base come stand in front of her. And
you know what I love about that is that RDA/Jack is standing there, hands in his pockets, like looking for all the world that he is just like hanging out, about to go have a beer. He doesn't look at ease. He does not look like he's at attention, ready to go fight. He's like, "Sup?
I'm hanging out, man."
I really get the feeling that the actors did not particularly enjoy making this episode, and that's what Shanks said.
Yes. It's in the Illustrated Companion, and there's a lot of interviews. If you want to amuse yourself, Google RDA and Hathor, and there's some quotes. Rick fucking hated it.
He does not like Hathor. Right. I know.
And that's what Shanks said at the con, too. That, I mean, well, Shanks obviously hated it, and he said that RDA hated it. So, so then we get the women are all in a holding cell.
Oh, boy.
And this is where we get the exchange of the mama said there'd be days like this. Sam and Janet have kind of a conversation of like, oh, yeah, you know, the Air Force is such a boys club. And Sam's like, I just don't know how to be one of the guys. And it's like, so why are we having this conversation right now?
This is probably the worst scene in almost all of SG-1.
Period. I think the rape scene is worse, but it's...
I mean, like, in terms of, like, tone deafness and, like, what the fuck? Did women have any vote? Were they in the writer's room at all looking at this? Because what the fuck?
Yeah.
I'm not even... I was going to try and defend it. I'm just not going to...
Like, it's entertaining. Like, I love seeing Amanda Tapping and Tel Rothery, like, go back and forth and, like, do their bantering. I like seeing, like, more lines for our ladies.
Uh-huh.
Again, simultaneously very self-aware and then very tone deaf.
Yeah,
it was just another convenient plot device to get to get Janet to like come up with this idea of, hey, could do this.
Yep, and then we get this wonderful, just delightful.
It's so bad.
Look, if Hathor's control drug is hormone-driven, like I suspect, that means she's making the man libidinous.
Okay. Why do I get the feeling I don't like where this is going?
Because it's bad. Because it's really bad. That's why you have the feeling.
And because Sam said libidinous.
Well, Janet says twice. It there. Janet says it there.
Oh, okay.
Sam says it later. Yeah, I feel like I would like to never have to hear that word ever again.
It's an uncomfortable word.
Everyone, first off, that word is awful. I agree. Awful word. Awful word.
Also, the way that Janet says...
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah. Libidinous.
No, don't say it!
It's just like, how did we get there so quick? Is this a fic? Is that what happened? We got here real quick to seduce the airmen.
Right? It's like, oh, but we're Sam stuck in a jail cell.
But Sam didn't read that in her manual.
Also, I need to know how, if it said in the script, and it's happening, now Sam will roll her eyes and cover her face and like look like this is the last thing on earth she wants to do. I need to know how much of that was in Man Tapping and how much of that was in the script.
I just wrote, after that, I wrote, kill me now.
Yes, yeah, it's so bad.
Oh my gosh. So that, and that's where the scene ends. It's like, why do I get the feeling I'm not going to like this?
I will say the one redeeming part of this scene that I did like is, I think it happened at the beginning. I think we might have glossed over it. But whenever they're, you know, lamenting how all the guys have turned, and Sam seems really reluctant to believe that Jack could be susceptible to it.
Oh, yeah. Because this is when she says that he's, was in this scene that she says that he's special forces trained?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, I just really can't buy it. Like, she almost doesn't question Hammond. Like, she doesn't question Daniel. She doesn't question any of the other guys, but like Jack, she really harps on, is like, it just rocks my world. He could possibly do this. Like, just found that really interesting.
Yeah. He Mel said it this time.
I did say it this time.
Jess! He's not even paying attention.
Huh? I'm sorry. I was looking at my notes. I'm sorry. What did
you say? Mel just said that Sam loves Jack.
That's because she does. Just like that, too. It was just
she
like
loves
that.
Him.
Exactly. Exactly. So the next scene is in back in Hathor's guest quarters, and Jack shows up because he has questions.
Oh, God, no. We're not done yet with the parts.
I hate this scene. I hate it.
So Jack walks in, has questions. He says he's feeling off, and that's weird for him. He's feeling uncomfortable. And so she whammies him again.
And then
opens his shirt.
God, no. Wait, God. First she has this like quick release bra on her dress. Yeah. Just she flicks a switch and it springs from her body.
Oh God, this fucking episode is a disaster.
And then she's opens Jack's shirt, and there's then like her belly button starts glowing.
She's got this like device attached to her stomach.
It's almost like the hand device. It's almost like the hand device that's on her belly button.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then she like pulls him in like she's gonna kiss him, and then instead there's like
it's like a belly kiss.
Well, yeah, and she's like
belly on belly action.
It's so bad.
And I didn't pull the clip because I hated it so much. And there was a lot of kind of dead air in the middle of it. But because she's like, oh, I'm going to make you. And there's like this big pause while she like holds him to her and the light goes off. And then she's like, my first Jaffa. And it's kind of this big reveal. Oh, and it's the worst.
I did not know when I first watched this episode for the very, very first time. I was like, holy shit, they made Jack a Jaffa. Going forward, they're going to have to like, Tilk's going to have to teach him how to be a Jaffa. That's going to be part of the show now. Like, this is really going to put a damper in my ship plans. Like, I don't know how I feel about this. I genuinely thought they had just made the decision to turn Jack into a Jaffa. Because I didn't think that a sarcophagus could, like, undo it.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah, same. Like,
why don't we just throw Teal'c in there?
I think it's because Teal'c's race is Jaffa. He was born
Jaffa. And he's also already got...
He has a symbiote.
Take it out, throw him in the sarcophagus.
I don't think that's how that works. Shifts.
Right,
that's
but why not?
Jack didn't have one yet.
Okay, but he still had no immune system.
But he was also...
the sarcophagus fixed the sarcophagus.
I think the sarcophagus presumably maybe restores you to, like, your... Like, so he's human baseline. And it's my understanding that Jaffa are a different race. And so...
No, because Jaffa are is the name of the people who, or the name of the That's why she calls him, "You're my first Jaffa."
Mm-hmm.
I always just assumed, because not everyone on Chulak has a pouch.
No. But, so, I don't know. I think it's just that it's returning you to your base state. I don't know. It is, I think it's a question that doesn't necessarily have a canon answer.
Because there's lots of speculation.
But, Jess, going back a bit to your original point, I agree with you. Like, I'm obviously coming into this episode blind, and coming into the series in general, pretty blind. And I did have that question where I was like, wait, is this a thing now? Is Jack just, like, officially a Jaffa moving forward? Like, I didn't realize this was part of the main, like, Stargate plot, but I expected it to have some larger ramifications, and for most of the episode until we got to that, you know, convenient plot twist at the very end. But I kind of expected it to linger, and I was kind of excited about it. I was like, this is complex. This is a new, like, level to the character that I didn't expect. But you know,
then they ended it.
It was complex for, you know, 6 or 7 minutes in the episode.
It was about 7 minutes,
I'm just going to say that RDA probably wouldn't have been on board for
He
had to be a Jaffa the whole time.
And he was an executive producer, so that was not going to happen.
I mean, look, it's also very problematic for me. I appreciate RDA's body, and to have it on display finally, it's great. Circumstances, not so great.
Not so great. Yep.
Can we talk about his petrified face after? That happened?
Yeah.
Like, he kind of snapped out of it for a sec there.
I mean, it further just reinforces how gross and terrible this is.
Okay, sorry. So next prison scene.
The next prison scene is when Sam says that they didn't teach us seduction.
Yeah, the Air Force.
It's not in the Air Force manual. But then she's like, well, they do tell us to take advantage of the enemy's weakness. They're like, well, we gotta do what we gotta do. So Janet calls the airman in, and we get this.
Gentlemen, there are 5 women in here, very alone.
Why do I feel like I'm in a Women Behind Bars movie?
Gross.
It's so bad.
God.
And then you cut it. I don't know if you kept going or not, but like the airmen come in, they're like, ladies, what did you have in mind?
I didn't.
And he like waves in his other little buddy. It's like,
Before they come in, the girls like, they like lower the shoulders on their army fatigues.
Yes.
It's.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So, you know, so the girl power, not off to a good start.
No. I don't know that I would call that girl
power.
That's
what I'm saying. It's not off to a good start. We're not doing very well at that, if that's what they were hoping to accomplish by having all the men be roofied.
Yep. And Janet, like, actually kisses one
she
of them.
She does. She actually, so she kisses
she
one.
Goes, she goes
And then
it.
The other one comes in and Sam elbows him in the face. And then Sergeant Westerholm grabs the one who's kissing Janet. And gets his gun, and they, I mean, it's pretty quick. They disarm him pretty quick. They didn't have to take it too far. Janet kissed the guy.
Yep.
Done.
It feels like she didn't have to do that.
She didn't.
She was just cool with it. She was like, all right, well, I'm just going to get in a quick one, and then we'll disarm the guy.
She was distracting the one while Sam disarmed the other.
Sure.
Okay.
Even Sam made like a little snide comment as they left.
Yes.
About, do you feel more like a woman now or something like that?
Yes. Yeah, yes.
No.
Yeah. You feel like a woman now, Doc?
The number of times I wrote eh or blah or ugh.
Mine were mostly yucks, but in the same vein.
I also feel like when I first watched this for the first time, it might have been at work and I was like half watching, you know? I cringed a lot more than I remembered on first watching on the second watch. This is only the second time I've seen it. I haven't seen it since the first time that I saw it for obvious reasons. And yeah, it's terrible. It's really, really terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it is. So they disarm the SFs and they go out into the hall. And then they immediately get kind of ambushed by some other soldiers. And we get this other... And Andrea and I started laughing.
I
had to pause it.
Scene.
Because it's like one soldier comes out and he's like, stop. And then like Westerholm knocks him over. And then Hammond comes out and he's like, stop. And then Carter's like, funk.
It cracked me.
Doesn't she go like, she goes, my career's over.
Yeah, I pulled her clip. Because it was like such an absurd way that played out.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny. Just like a domino effect of headbutts. Like,
yes. And they managed to, you know, secure the perimeter or whatever without seducing Hammond and this random airman, is all I'm saying. There was other way.
Yeah, so, but this is Carter's line.
Yeah, my career's over.
Don't worry about it. I can fix him up as good as new when this thing's over.
Great, so he can bring me up on charges.
In my head, after the, like, you know, people were constantly just like boop, 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 getting their heads knocked in, all I could hear was like Qui-Gon Jinn in the background being like, there's always a bigger fish.
Yes.
I thought it was interesting that they knock out Hammond cold. She, like, in the back of his head, and Janet's like, oh, don't worry, I can fix him up good as new. And I'm like, no, he has a head injury. Can we not be so blasé about head injuries?
She just means cosmetically she can fix him up.
Yeah. Fix that. What was it? A crown of marble.
Yep. So then they let Teal'c out, who was in his own holding cell, apparently. And she leaves some of the women to, like, drag all the men into the holding cells. And then they go down the hall to go try and take the locker room. And there's a great moment. And I went to pull the clip, but it doesn't play. It's a visual gag, kind of, where she's like, okay, on three. And then she gets ready to start to count, and Teal'c just waltzes into the locker room. It made me laugh.
Teal'c is still learning the finer points of military command.
Of the American military tactics.
Yeah.
And he's used to being in charge, too, because he was the first prime.
Yeah.
At least being in charge of soldiers.
But he still differs to Sam.
Well, he does. He just doesn't always, he's not always on board with their way of doing things. So then we walk into the locker room with a hot tub full of shrimp. Gross. Okay,
shrieking babies. I have a thing about that. Okay. So I thought it legitimately was shrimp. It is not.
Is this behind the scenes?
Yeah, yeah. So from the Illustrated Companion, it says, okay, you know the scene where she's in the big bathtub and all those little baby goa'uld are supposed to be coming out of her? We were in hell. We could not get that scene to work. We had near on 1,000 of those little latex wormy things, and we dumped them into the tub, thinking that the churning water would make them slime all around her. Instead, they just floated to the top and sat there with the water churning away underneath. It looked just like she was sitting in a tub full of rubber things, and there was nothing we could do about it. We tried attaching them to fishing line and having the crew off camera try to move them about. We tried all sorts of bizarre ways to make them look alive, but nothing worked. Then the visual effects guys, gods that they are, moseyed on over and said, hey, you want us to fix that for you? They cut out each of those stupid little rubber things in post-production and computer animated them. So it's all down to those guys that we got the little critters jumping in and out of the water.
Whoa! Wow. That's actually really impressive that was really cool. 97 visual effects. Mm-hmm. As gross as it was.
Yeah, I definitely thought it was some kind of practical effect.
Yeah, I did. Well, and so a thing I noted, I think it's in this scene. Yeah, so when she steps up out of the bathtub,
Her hair is dry.
Because, and they clearly filmed it in reverse. They played it backwards. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was watching, I was like, what the heck? Her hair's dry. And the way she stepped out was almost like the ring chick or something. It was a little stilted and weird.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I think they filmed that in reverse. So then we watched it again. And I was like, yep, they definitely. Yep.
And there was something fishy about, like, the way her skirt kind of shimmied whenever she came up.
Yeah.
And it made more sense.
It was an interesting choice. I don't totally understand why. But it was kind of interesting.
She's super soaking gross when she comes out of the water, I guess.
I feel like it would have been more visually interesting if she was, like, sticky, wet, gross.
I mean, maybe it's just to establish that she is kind of magical and she can get out of a tub of water. Yeah. Maybe it's because it's not actually water in there since it ignites later.
Oh, God. But also, I don't want to think about what's inside that tub. There's a lot of them. Jesus Christ. That's like a giant, like, layer. You can't see underneath it. It's genuinely upsetting to look at.
Yep. Yeah. So then Jack is, like, kind of passed out next to this, and then he gets plopped into the hot tub, and they're like, and she, oh my gosh, it's so gross. She's like, oh, the strongest one will find its way in.
And she calls just it like, womb.
Oh gosh.
Does she say womb? I thought she said she wound.
No, womb.
Oh, that's even worse. That is so worse.
It's horrible.
Oh god. I wrote in my notes, shrimp insemination. This is my least favorite thing. Black.
It's not good.
So then Hathor leaves the room for Jack to that to happen. Yes. And Teal, they come in and pull him out of the hot tub and lay him down. And Janet just jumps and dives her hand right on in there. And discovers that there is not a symbiote in there, which is good, but also bad because he has no immune system.
You know what is in there? Some sort of weird yellow-green goo.
I assumed it was, like, pus.
Yes. When Janet pulls her hand out, it's, like, covered in this, like, pussy-looking liquid. Also, again, conflicting emotions. Wet Jack, shirtless Jack. Not the best of context, but... conflicting viewing feelings.
Yep. It happens. Teal'c is then fireman carrying Jack down the hall, and Janet's like, well, why don't we go to the infirmary? And he's like, we've already established that you guys don't have a solution to this problem.
Yep.
And so they go to the gate room and drop him in the sarcophagus, because conveniently we have a sarcophagus.
Woo!
And
convenient plot point.
Yeah. And we get another nice shirtless shot with his dog tags in full view, which I thought Jess would appreciate.
Oh, of course. Melody gave me those gifts so early on. They're still saved to my phone.
I haven't made that one, though.
You have the... No, not that one, but the one where he falls with Sam.
I have made that
Jess
one.
Jess has That's a thing correct. About Jack and his dog tags.
Okay. So does Melanie.
Duly noted.
Yeah.
He's just so hot is the thing. So.
You're like, if I have to explain it, it really comes down to just how hot he is.
Yeah, basically. I mean, there's other qualities, but the hotness is number one.
So Jack is in the sarcophagus, and then the doors to the gate room open, and shots start ringing out, and so they go to take cover behind the sarcophagus. Teal'c and Janet both take bullets.
Focus shot.
Yeah. Which, no real fallout from that. They both just get shot.
Yeah. Well, and they're, like, totally unfazed.
She got, like, shot, like, here, too. Like, it was, like, here. And I don't remember what side it was.
Teal'c got nailed in the arm and the leg.
Yeah. Shoulders are the go-to place for, like, minor injuries in movies. And it's like, no, shoulders can get effed up, people. Like, let's not pretend that getting shot in the shoulder means you're going to be A-okay.
I feel like there's not really a good place to get shot.
No, I'm going to go ahead and say, yeah, sure. Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, it earlobe? Is true. What? The earlobe?
Earlobe? You probably go deaf. Take one of those suckers off and you'd probably be okay.
Yeah, but you might go deaf if you had a bullet that close to your ear.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Then, so there's all these shots firing and the sarcophagus opens and Jack kind of sits up and there's just like mayhem. And Hathor is all disappointed in him, and she goes to use her hand device. And, like, poor Jack, like, what must he be thinking? He, like, wakes up in a sarcophagus. He sits up. There's gunfire everywhere. And then there's just this, like, crazy chick with a
with hand. An Iron and he's Man like, pulser on
oh,
her.
Crap. And he just, yeah. He just gets out of there. Like, the good reflexes by Jack. Just gets right on out of there, avoids getting killed. The hand device hits the sarcophagus, which starts, like, sparking and being in bad shape, and
Sam tosses Jack Teal'c's forgotten gun.
Yep, which I love that. So there's not really any exchange here. That Sam is just like assuming that he's good now, and she just gives him a gun, and he. I mean, I think Hathor so did try to kill him. What?
There's a small exchange.
It's really quick though.
Yeah,
I would assume that the fact that Hathor tried to kill him is a good indication that he's probably on your side now. So she gives him a gun and he joins the fray. And they shoot some of the other SFs on Hathor's side. Maybe they got not mortally wounded like Teal'c and Janet did. But so then they all scramble out of the gate room. The doors close just as the sarcophagus explodes and there's a big ball of fire. And
which the sarcophagus is still in the gate room, right?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So, good thing that didn't damage the Stargate in any way.
I don't think the Stargate can be damaged.
Not really.
I mean, you can still bury it. You can still bury it or explode it or do something to it.
You can bury it. I don't think it can be destroyed. I don't think you can ever truly destroy Stargate.
We never see it happen.
Unless you throw it into a sun, then it
presumably
presumably disappears.
Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, I got a little nervous when I saw that sarcophagus explode. I was like, ooh, that's real close to the gate. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that.
I wrote down Jack won't button his shirt because of reasons. Like yeah. I understand whenever he's like, you know, all seduced and everything, but then like now he's good and he's just like letting it hang out.
Well, those reasons are called fan service. And I, for one, am here for it.
Yeah. So then we get...
Nobody knew that. No one knew that.
So then we get everyone kind of checking on each other in the hall, and we get this glorious exchange.
Do you mind if I have a look?
At what?
Well, you were, let's just say you were wounded. Wow. That's a miracle.
Crunches.
Okay, let's break it down. First, we have, can't take a look. And Jack's response is, at what? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, at what, Jack? What are the options? I want to know. What's on the table? Okay, then we've got Sam's first response to Jack's abs is, wow,
mm-hmm.
Same, very relatable. And then Jack played it off kind of flirtatiously with crunches.
Yep, that sums it up.
Thank you for breaking that down for us.
I literally cannot wait to write the post epic for this. I'm so excited.
You woke your cat up. That's how excited you were.
What'd I say?
You woke your cat up. That's how excited you were. You woke Pig up. He moved.
I'm sorry, Pig. Well, Nox is also between my legs right now, and every time I like move in excitement, she looks up at me and she goes, meow.
It's a great exchange. It's one of the few kind of actual playful moments in the episode. Like, if you can take it out of the context of everything else that happened in the episode, just that kind of playful exchange between them is really cute and funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Jack's ability to kind of play things off that way.
I mean, is he playing it off, or is he like legitimately confused as to why she wanted to see his gut? Because like he has no reason.
He has no idea.
He has no reason to think like, oh, I had some sort of like, what is that? Like, It looks like the bit on a like a soda lid that you put the straw through. You know what I'm talking about? He's got a little straw opening in his belly, but like he has no reason of knowing that that was there a few minutes ago. Yeah. So he probably is legit like crunches.
I think that's why Sam was like, let's just say you were wounded.
Do we think that RDA ad-libbed that part?
I fucking hope so.
I think probably.
I feel like it's based on like all of the con like Q&A's that I've seen. I don't think Rick followed his script 90% of the time.
It's my understanding that they eventually kind of convinced him to follow the script in the table reads, but on set all bets were off and he said pretty much what he wanted.
There must have been some kind of joke there, because otherwise there's no button for the scene. Like there's no reason for to have that scene unless mm-hmm. he has some sort of like quirky comeback. So it might not have been crunches specifically, but I'm certain there was some sort of response from Jack in the script.
Yeah, but I'm really glad it was
you may
crunches.
Be overestimating the writers in this episode.
yeah.
Okay, fair point, I guess.
You would have put a button on the scene. Yeah, so then Jack is like, Sam is like, well, how do we take him out? Because there are guys. And he goes, well, there's trank guns. We will go get the trank guns. And she's like, no, there's no trank guns in the armory. And he says, oh, but there are in lockup C.
I like how that's not common knowledge to everyone.
Yeah.
Like, only certain people know there are trank guns in this area.
And why are they in lockup C?
Well, and Carter being like, why doesn't anyone tell me these things? Like, that would have been nice to know.
I read a fic where...
He's a great...
Jess is about to
die. I was just about to say.
What is happening?
There's a great post-up fic for this where that actually gets addressed.
Yeah. Where Jack takes Sam on a tour of the whole base and shows her all of the nooks and crannies. That sounded dirty.
Ooh.
I need a link for that, please. Hit me up, Jeff.
Okay.
Donkey
Kong.
Continue.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. I felt Sam's frustration in that moment of like, why the hell do I not know this? Like, how this is very important information that she should definitely have had.
I feel like she should know that information just because she's a captain on the base.
Right.
I don't know. So.
Yeah, agreed.
And they've used trank guns before in the Broca Divide.
They did.
So they go to the locker room, and Hathor sicks everybody on Carter, and Daniel asks for mercy, which is kind of interesting. Like, there's still some Daniel in there that's like, don't kill her.
Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't see Carter. We see Hathor saying, go get Carter. Mm-hmm. And so Jack and Carter sneak into the locker room. And when Carter pops up to try and shoot them, she gets hand-devised and smacked against the wall. And then
I gotta say,
they both shoot people first.
Yeah, they shoot a couple of everyone. Not everybody.
Everybody but Hathor.
And Daniel. Yeah.
And yeah, then Hathor, like Iron Man pulses.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I was about to be, so when I first watched this episode, I was supposed to be really fucking pissed because I thought it was going to be like a situation like in Enemy Within, when she got knocked out against the wall and that Jack was going to end up coming in and finishing off Hathor. Mm. And I wanted to be like, don't you come in here and steal her thunder. How dare you? How dare you?
Yeah.
And I was getting myself worked up in the like 5 seconds that she was knocked out.
Yeah. So then Hathor turns her hand device on Jack and is about to kill Jack. And then Sam pops back up and freaking like empties her clip just into unloads Hathor. Unloads
on the girl.
Bam, 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 bam.
Yep.
Yep.
Why do you think Jack hesitated? Because he had a clear shot the whole time, but he just stared at her.
I can only imagine, though, that he got distracted by Sam getting thrown across the room.
But he wasn't even looking at Sam.
Well, but maybe he was still thinking, like, they could maybe detain her and, like, take her in peacefully. And Sam was just like, nope, she doesn't deserve it. I know what she did.
Okay, I mean, I like that. That's good.
When Sam shoots Hathor like 20 times, the hot tub bursts into flames.
Yeah,
okay, I thought that was Hathor. Right?
She fell into the hot tub.
Yeah,
and then spontaneously combusted,
bursts into flames.
Yeah. But they didn't spontaneously combust.
Well, the only thing I can think of is that, like, those hot tubs are, like, circulated or whatever. Like, they're either, like, electric or gas-powered or however you want to do it. But, like, we have one of those hot tubs in high school for,
athletes, like, games and training stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it was, like, electric. So I could see there being, like, some kind of spark or something. I don't know.
That started water on fire?
Sure! Maybe there's something flammable in her blood.
The blood alcohol.
Well, I put that. I wonder, are gold super flammable, or was the water some weird amniotic fluid that's flammable, and it wasn't actually water? I don't know.
I don't like either of those answers. They're both gross answers.
I think that we have used the word like fluid and pus and juices way too much in this episode.
I mean, luckily they didn't say moist, because I don't like that word.
Well, now you did.
I said it, but they didn't say it.
Anyway, so Hathor and the hot tub are in flames, and they go grab Daniel to drag him out, and while they're kind of pulling people away from it, very sneakily, Hathor, like, sneaks out.
It's blink and you miss it.
Yeah.
Chels had to rewind it. She was like, did you see that? And I was like, what? No. And I was like, you mean the tub that's on fire? And she's like, no, in the background, look, there goes Hathor scurrying away.
Yeah. Well, and you can even kind of see a little bit of a shield device thing moment. And then she leaves. So presumably that's how she survived, is that, like, Sam shooting her a bajillion times was that she used her shield device.
What? Maybe. She had a shield device?
Well, I don't know if all gold have it.
But she had a hand device.
She had a hand device.
So I can only assume the hand devices, what the other hand devices do.
But not all hand devices destroy, because there's also like the healing device and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
it looks a little different. The healing device looks different than the ribbon device.
Oh, which is the ring. But Apophis and Hathor both have the ribbon device.
Yeah. So Hathor escapes and goes to the gate room. There's the unauthorized gate activation, and they identify that she is going to Chulak. And I mean, that's pretty. So, and they're like, yeah. Oh, should we go after her? And Jack's like, yeah, later.
After a super long pause.
I want to know why she's going to Chulak.
That's like an interesting question. Maybe because she wants Jaffa?
I thought that Chulak was loyal to Apophis.
Yeah.
Like the people and all the Jaffa were loyal to Apophis.
Maybe she really is going after Apophis.
Oh, that's true. So maybe she's going to wipe out his Jaffa first.
Or try and steal some of their loyalty.
Where is that?
Chulak is Teal'c's homeworld.
From the first episode?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so then as she leaves, then Daniel's all of a sudden like, what happened? What's going on? And and so seemingly her powers need her to be in somewhat close proximity to keep people under her thrall.
I mean, I am glad that Daniel doesn't really remember what happened to him, because...
But hang on, he does, because he says... Whenever they're, who is it? I guess it's Janet saying, like...
taking samples.
Yeah, taking samples, and she's like, oh, and, you know, now we can search it for, you know, special DNA or whatever. And he chimes in and says, some of that DNA might be mine. So he definitely knows that he was raped.
Like, he said, because he does, he says that. Yeah,
and
so
then he made, like, a joke about it. He made a joke about it.
Yeah.
He didn't really, though. Yeah. But
yeah,
so...
Yeah, he did.
What was his joke?
What did he say?
I tuned out at some point.
It was basically like some of that DNA might be mine, and the way it kind of came off.
I agree with you. It was kind of
like he was kind of like
it didn't fall right. Yeah.
He was kind of downplaying it. So then General Hammond comes in, and poor Carter is like, "General, sir," and all freaked out, and we get this exchange.
Wait, General Hammond, sir.
At ease, Captain. At ease, Doctor.
Thank you, sir. About your head, I'd like to explain that if I could.
Captain, I'm putting you and Dr. Fraser up for a commendation medal.
Well, thank you, sir, but I can't explain. You are?
If you hadn't kept your wits about you and done whatever was necessary, we could have put this entire planet at risk. Good job, ladies.
Thank you, sir.
Well, that's all. Nice job.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but Sam and Jack totally smile at each other, and it's great.
Yep.
And I love it. And
it's adorable. She's so, like, she's so pleased. I love it. Her face is really adorable there at the end.
And Jack is so proud.
He is.
It does sort of feel like he's congratulating her on being so straight.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, thanks for not falling victim to this seductress. Things could have gone badly if you had been seduced too.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, she also did take, and he says, kept her wits about her and took quick action. Like she.
Yeah.
I really wrinkled my nose at the nice job ladies. I wish the line had been like nice job officers or something. I get it. It's because they were ladies. They were able to be immune. I don't like it. I really wrinkled my nose at it.
It's like how they said that Zach Ertz's wife is in the World Cup.
Right. Just say her name.
Yeah.
Her name is Julie.
And it's Julie.
Yeah. Come here.
And that's the end of the episode.
It's so fucking bad.
Yeah, that's it. It's over. The end. That was the episode. Yeah.
And we don't ever have to watch it again.
Never, ever.
And we never have to hear that word again. Hopefully.
Juices?
No, I mean, that one has to come up. The other R word.
The L word.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Also, this, I think, is our last rape, but I was referring to the L one.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
The L one.
Oh, don't make me say it.
Say it.
Oh! Libidinous.
See, I think there's a good chance that outside of this and me having to edit it and listen to it, I shouldn't ever have to hear that word again because I've never heard it outside of this episode. No human person has ever used that word other than Janet Friedman.
I'm changing my Tinder profile right now to say libidinous woman seeks libidinous man. Please don't do that.
Oh, gosh. All right.
It's happening.
Let's rate this episode. Rate. Who wants to go first?
I don't. Let Andrea go first. She went first last time.
Yeah, oh. We made her go first last time.
Shit. I did.
I'll go first.
All right.
I'm giving it two.
Two out of what?
And
seven.
Out of seven. And so you may be thinking, Jessica, why didn't you just give it a one or a zero? And that's a great question, and I'll tell you. I am giving it one chevron for Jack being shirtless because I'm weak. And I'm giving a second chevron because Sam and Janet kicked ass. And there were some enjoyable moments of them wielding guns, kicking ass, etc. So I'm giving it a chevron apiece for that, and that's it.
All right.
Those are the only reasons.
All right, I'll go next. So I'm giving it a 2.5 out of 7. Wow.
Yeah. I'm just going to disown this. We're going to kick off the podcast.
What?
I'm just surprised. No, let's hear it. I want to hear.
Oh, no. It's for the same exact reasons as Jess, except that the Carter scenes get a little bit higher. They get like a little higher bump because
you love Carter.
I love Carter. And so there's nothing redeemable about this episode at all. It's awful. And it's just.
It's important to note that the chevrons that we're giving it are purely for our own personal fan service. Yes. And not because we actually enjoy. Like, those moments aside, it's a 0 out of 7 for
okay,
me.
Yeah. Okay, hang on. So, besides the whole Sam, Janet, and Jack scenario part, as Jess just said, it's a complete 0. I got nothing on it. It's awful. It shouldn't have been made. The writing is terrible. It's just bad.
Yeah. I'm just giving it a 0 for all the reasons that I have stated the rest of this episode. I mean, I agree, like, shirtless Jack is great and stuff, but for me, it is, like, there's only a few minutes of Sam and Janet being badass, and in order to do it, they first have to do the, like, whole seductress. It just, any good thing it does, it then, like, flushes it down the drain, and yeah, I'm giving, I think I like this one less than Emancipation.
I do too.
So 0 for me. I think I gave Emancipation 1.
Or like a 0.5. I'll give it a 0.5 for the other stuff. I'll knock down full chevrons.
I would probably.
You can't just change your rank.
Uh-huh. Watch me. There's no rules.
Okay, fine. I'm going to join you at your 0.5 rating. There.
Wow.
Andrew?
Yeah, like, I don't really like this episode. I can see what you're saying about, like, you know, Sam and Janet and everything, but it's also. Even their badass scenes were written really poorly. It was like badass, but in a degrading way still. So I don't know. I can't really get behind this episode. The two things that I liked about the episode, I did not know that was a visual effect in the tub and not a practical effect. And I am impressed by that now that I know it. So that was cool. And I really did love the, like, domino of headbutts. That scene was, like, my favorite scene of the entire episode. So those two little tidbits put together, I give it, I don't know, maybe a 1.
That's fair.
Okay.
I think we can all agree it's the worst episode that's ever happened to SG-1, either entirely or up until this point.
Yeah.
I would say entirely.
I would say probably 2, but we'll see when we get. I can't think of anything that challenges it except for. I mean, no.
Politics.
Well.
Or Unending.
Unending, maybe. Politics, no. I mean, it's a clip show.
Politics is not a clip show. It's a clip show.
Yeah.
It's like a 0 because it's a clip show.
And, yeah. But it has the great line.
Okay.
That's at least a chevron. At least a chevron. We can get there.
This episode almost made me stop watching Stargate the first time I started watching it.
What?
It was so bad. I think I remember thinking that, like, it was dumb and I was bored and I hadn't really been hooked as, like, I know Fire and Water was your hook episode, Mel, but I liked it, but it wasn't my hook episode. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, like, all right, I'm giving it one more and then I'm tapping out. And I'm so glad I did, because the next episode is Singularity, and that is the episode that hooked me. And I'm just really glad that that I got to that point so I could keep going. But, oof.
Yeah,
you really had to pay your to get there.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they did. Maybe this was the episode to try to weed out the bad the fans that don't have the stomach for these kinds of, you know, these
discriminating
kind of
fans.
Yeah.
So,
and if you can make it past this one, you can survive the rest of Stargate.
So when I watched this, the first one, I said, my first was, oh dear, I smell a sex pollen episode or some variation thereof. And Jess, you said, remember those sexual assault eps we mentioned? You're in the last one. I said, oh, good.
I was trying to make sure that you kept watching because I knew Singularity was next.
Yeah. I said, at least Carter got to kick some ass while all the dudes were getting sexually assaulted.
Yeah, not a good episode.
It's not.
Singularity is next.
Yes.
Yes. So
first we got to give our air medal award.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, Sam, right?
Sam. 100%.
No brainer.
And, team, way to go.
Yeah. And yeah, so then that's this episode. Next episode, we'll be talking about Singularity, which is a much better episode than this one. We look forward to talking about it. If you would like to give us some feedback, if you did like this episode, we genuinely are curious and would love to know what you like about it and what is entertaining to you about it. So feel free to reach out to us at chevronslock7@gmail.com or on Twitter at chevronslock7. And you can find me, Chelsea, on Twitter at Cahils or on Tumblr at Pianosa2to the Fighting 8th.
And you can find me, Jess, on Twitter at ProfTenant or on Tumblr at Professor Tenant.
And you can find me on Twitter at Melanie Martian, MARSHAN, or on Tumblr at My Stupid Dumb Flyboy.
And if you want to follow me, Andrea, I am Munker4444 on both Tumblr and Twitter.
All right, and this is what I got for, basically, I decided our closing clip should just sum up our feelings on the episode.
You.
Yesterday the other day when Katie came over, it was raining really, really hard on the way to IKEA and I couldn't hear what she was saying. And I literally tried to turn down the rain. I reached over for my radio and turned the volume down, thinking that would turn the sound of the rain down.
That's awesome.
That's funny.
I've tried to turn up the volume of my kids in the back seat before when they're talking to me.
I've tried to enlarge a map, like an act, like a physical map. I like did this thing with my fingers. It was not one of my brightest moments.